Oh boy, it's the Raleigh James Show.
What you trying to do to my heart? What you trying to do to my heart? You're going around, you're telling lies, you're fooling around with the other guys. What you trying to do to my heart? What are you trying to do to my soul? Everything I had was yours. Now I'm closing all the doors. What you trying to do to my soul? You better run. You better hide.
It is the Raleigh James Show, and if you're saying, where's doo-doo-doo-ba-ah, oh, it's here, but I thought we'd start the hour with something from Angel Rissoff's New Soul Stories. It's his latest CD, and it is, as all of them are, just wonderful. Plenty to talk about tonight, but before we get to it, because it's all depressing as hell, I figured we'd spend time with Angel, who is not depressing. So, Angel Rissoff, welcome to the Raleigh James Show.
Raleigh, how are you?
Well, I'm fine. How are you doing, Angel?
Well, I'm not depressed. I'm doing I'm doing well, thank you.
I'm delighted to hear it. And more I see your name associated with beach music. And
yes.
I know that you've been aware of beach music for some time, but it's, to me, it's quite a change from, say, when you were Little Leopold, and quite a change even when you were with Kenny Vance. How did the beach music community get wind of Angel Rissoff?
Well, actually, it was through Little Isidore and the Inquisitors.
Really?
A song we recorded, Harlem Hit Parade, which I was the lead singer on, unbeknownst to us, became a big hit in the beach music market. We were told that we didn't even know that the beach music market existed.
Yeah.
We were just putting out stuff that we called rhythm and blues, rock and roll, whatever, you know, whatever name you wanted to give it, but we were told that there's this big scene, and they were really playing this stuff. And then finally, we got in touch with somebody down there, and we started to go down there. But then I put out a Little Leopold album,
mm-hmm.
which did pretty well, and it took off from there. I started putting out albums under my own name.
It's interesting that I think most people who find out they have huge hits in the beach community are just like you, saying, I never heard of this stuff. And it's almost to a person, and yet shortly thereafter, you look at their appearance schedules, and it seems more and more that you're appearing in the Carolinas.
Yeah, well, you know, beach music is sort of a misnomer. People think it's when you say beach music, they say the Beach Boys, Jan and Dean, that's surf music.
Right. I was going to say, that's surf music. Actually, beach music, as you well know, is a euphemism, because when this started in the 40s and certainly into the 50s, you couldn't come back from your beach vacation from the Myrtle Beaches of the world, the Wilmingtons. You couldn't come back to Raleigh or to Charlotte and say, I want to hear those race records, which was what were on
right.
the jukeboxes. So you'd say, let's hear that music we heard at the beach, that beach
exactly.
music. And it's
exactly. The early beach music was the Drifters, Hank Ballard and the Midnighters. 60 Minute Man was a big one.
Oh, one of the top three of all time is 60
yeah.
Minute Man to this day. And yes, the last thing you could do was admit you were listening to this. So that beach music, the music you heard at the beach. What's interesting to me is that this was going on in the 40s, and it is just as strong, though albeit somewhat differently, today, that a music form has not only lasted so long, but literally has become a lifestyle.
It's become a lifestyle, but it's also, there's a lot of younger people into it, and it's evolved.
Yeah.
It borders on dance music, not disco, but dance music. There are
shag clubs.
Shag clubs. There are beach music clubs. Mm. There are shag competitions. Pretty amazing amount of people get involved in this.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah. With some of those shag competitions, more than the music, it's virtually a sport.
Mm-hmm. It's very athletic. It's pretty amazing when you watch the competitions.
Yeah, you betcha. What percentage now do you think of your gigs are in the Carolinas?
Oh, I'd just say 20-30%. If I lived down there, I probably would do more.
Yeah. Yeah, but even so, that's quite a bit. Now, I first had heard of you when you were Little Leopold, and I still have Bring It On. In fact, we'll play Jitter Bop later. But what were you doing before becoming Little Leopold?
Well, I was being Angel Rissoff.
And tell me about
I had played with Chuck Berry, Gene Cornish. I had a band with Gene Cornish from the Rascals. That's I've been friends with him for 25 years. That's how he came to play on this song you just played.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. This CD has even more impact then, because while it's your latest, it's a return to your earliest roots.
Yeah, well, and I played with a lot of people. I did a lot of stuff as a sideman playing bass. Mm-hmm. And as a background singer, I did jingles, and but I played with a number of people. And the funny thing about the Little Leopold thing and the Little Isidore and we were the first family of rhythm and blues. None of us were really related,
right?
But it was a very clever thing that Dave Foreman, who was Little Isidore, made up. He created it, and people believed it. There was a backstory that he disappeared in the 60s, that we hit records, which we didn't, but our records did sound like they came from the 60s or the late 50s. And people believed the backstory. And to this day, people come over to me that really don't know and say, "How's your brother?"
That's tremendous. And yes, it was a whole story, which was what was so neat about that. But I'm sure when you started that, you figured that everybody was in on the gag, which...
Well, we thought it was, well, we knew it was a gag, and he presented it as tongue-in-cheek, but a lot of people took it seriously.
Right. Right, and he's still appearing as Little Isidore, is he not?
He does, yeah, he does, and he's got a new Inquisitors, and he's doing pretty well. I actually did a bunch of gigs with him a few years ago. We played a bunch of theaters and things like that. We had a little review. And Dave is a very creative guy. He's been doing jingles all through the years, and he's still writing for different artists.
Yeah. Now, I did not know about your jingles past, so of all the products you sung for, which which is the most memorable? And I mean that
most memorable is one that I did with Dion. We did, "It's the Snake Light for Black and Decker. It goes around and around." We did that, and that played for a few years. It was,
yeah.
But I did beer commercials and different things.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a living, but most people I know who've sung jingles have one or two products that they'd prefer never saw the light of day. Did you ever sing anything where you thought, "Please don't let it be known it's me"?
There was one for Pampers, but it never did see the light of day. And there was another one for Hanes that was an underwear commercial that never did see the light of day, that I'm glad it did.
Yeah, interesting choice. So from Little Isidore, was it into Kenny Vance? Was that a direct connection?
Yeah, that was pretty much how it went. I got into Kenny Vance. I did that for about 9 years.
I know. That's, I think, where we first met in person.
Yes.
We were doing that.
Yeah,
and
I remember. It was out at the Baker's, right?
Yeah,
Right. And that was a good gig, but it's Kenny's gig, and I did it for a long time. I enjoyed it. I loved working with those guys, but I thought it was time to move on.
Yeah. Yeah, do something under your own name, which, takes a certain amount of guts to do that. Certainly you had the chops. Musically, there was not going to be a question, but in some ways, it's reinventing yourself, because people knew Little Leopold, they knew Kenny Vance, but now they're going to know Angel Rissoff. So that happened.
Yeah, it took me a while to... I'm still in the process of doing that. Some people still call me Little Leopold, but it was, it was a matter of... I didn't want to look back on my life and say, shoulda, woulda, coulda. You know, it just felt like the right time to do something.
Yeah. Now, do you, with your CDs, do you put them out yourself, or are you using a label?
I do. I've been putting these, the ones under my name, I've been putting out myself, yeah.
Which is great, because I know back in the day what an artist wouldn't have given to be able to do that. Technologically, right. Now, you can. The problem comes when you're not with a major label and you don't have that distribution, how you sell them. So I'm fascinated.
Well, the internet has made it easier in some respects. But the music business, as far as major labels, is not the same anymore anyway.
Oh, of course not. And you know, when you're doing a schedule of live events, it's certainly easy to say, you know, the CDs are on sale. That's going to do that. But when you're talking about internet marketing, have you come up with any tricks where you say, you know, this really is getting more talk about this stuff?
No, not really. I just, I do a lot of interviews, and I spread the word on Facebook, through emails. I've gotten a lot of play, and over the years, since with every CD, I make new friends in different countries and different places, so I make people aware of it, and I've gotten a lot of press, which helps. It's still a struggle. I mean, you know, and a lot of the stuff is streaming now, which doesn't pay a lot, but there's a lot of streaming. And there's downloads, so there's different ways you can monetize it. But you know, it's an independent. It's just like independent labels always were.
Right, right.
Well, I just long for the days. I wish I could just fill my trunk up with records and go on the road like the Chess Brothers did.
Exactly, and
that would be a great thing. I would love that.
Well, the neatest thing about that is when the Chess Brothers were doing that is they were, of course, going to radio for the airplay, and there was a finite amount of radio stations. So if
right.
you're sitting in Cleveland or Detroit or wherever, you were listening to one of maybe three stations, so you didn't have to cover very much. So
right.
here you have an internet where you're covering literally the world and
right.
an infinite amount of people. The problem is that there's an infinite amount of places that people can go online, so
right.
standing out from the crowd becomes the real challenge.
Right. It is a challenge, but it's my mission, and I chose to accept it.
Absolutely, and you've done a great job of it. Now, we're talking about beach music here, which, of course, is a real phenomenon, but you mentioned international markets, and things like Northern Soul in Great Britain is
right.
also a phenomenon, and something tells me that you probably are a big Northern Soul act.
Yeah, I've leased some stuff to a label there that they put out on a 45, because a lot of the Northern Soul clubs will not play anything on a CD. They'll
right.
only play vinyl.
Right.
So I've had a 45 out in England that did pretty well, and I do business with people in England.
Okay, so...
And there's also there's people in Italy and Czechoslovakia and...
Wow. Now, the 45, what did Northern Soul choose to put on a 45?
They put Soothe You.
Oh, yeah.
And Break Out the Tears.
That's from New Soul Explosion, as
right.
far as Soothe You, which is just, and Break Out the Tears. Great, great records. So that's, and I'm sure they're huge.
It was on the Real Side label, and... Well, it was interesting. 45. I still collect 45s.
Sure.
I love 45s. I love vinyl.
Oh, me too. Me too. Label art, for instance. You know,
yes.
people don't think about that as a big deal, but nothing neater than seeing the label art and what the shuck looks like and being able
right.
to hold it in your hand. There's something very tactile about it that
there is, and I think
have.
People got to know an artist much better when
yes.
they had an album in their hands and could look at the picture. Now you have to squint to see anything on CD covers, and CDs are disappearing as well.
Now, that's interesting. When CDs first came out, of course, the older music was at a decided disadvantage because the algorithms did not produce it well.
Mm-hmm.
The first ones, as you remember, were just horrific. And to this day, they're not going to have the warmth of the pear-shaped, tubed sounds. But today, CDs are pretty darn good at reproducing sound. Downloads, on the other hand, is a whole nother ballgame, especially when they're MP3 downloads. What do you think it's doing to the quality of your stuff?
Well, it compresses it. It thins it out. I mean, we spend a lot of time working on the mixes and working on the bottom end. And, you know, and when it's streamed or it's downloaded, it just thins it out. It compresses it.
And back in the day, like Motown, a Berry Gordy, he would have a speaker from a Ford right there in the studio. And if it didn't sound good coming out of that Ford speaker, then the mix wasn't going to be right for
That's the way I test my mixes in the car.
Yeah, well, absolutely. But I was wondering, because things are going so much to downloads, do you also test them for how do they sound when they're compressed as an MP3?
Well, sometimes you have to overcompensate. You overcompensate the bass. And the bass drum, and you just have to take that into consideration.
Do you find that, of course, the purists, the people like in Great Britain, who they're putting it on a 45, they're not about to download anything. But on the other hand, the people who are downloading, especially those who are longer of tooth like you and I, who remember what it used to sound like, do you find that anybody really cares? I mean, we do, but the end user, do they ever really care?
No,
that it,
they don't. They don't know the difference.
Isn't that
they know the difference once they've heard the difference?
Right.
But, you know, unless they've heard something on a record and on a CD, they don't know the difference.
Right. So that's not an issue at all. But it is interesting when you A-B it with vinyl and that. It is kind of a rude awakening. But you're right. Probably the majority of your people have never done that or had reason.
The thing is, I recorded an album with a group this year, the City Boy All-Stars, and the company put it out on a CD and vinyl, a double album.
Ah.
And you can tell the difference immediately.
That's
it's
great.
It's amazing, the difference.
That's great. Well, you know, hopefully that difference will cause people to maybe come back to vinyl. Maybe it will show
resurgence.
I think
vinyl is making a comeback, but in a limited amount. I don't know if people are going to go into buying a product anymore. My daughter's 18 years old, and now she says to me, she said, "Dad, I feel very retro. I just bought some CDs." It's the first CD she's ever owned. She has 3,000 songs, but it's the first CD she's ever purchased.
Interesting.
So,
and that makes
it,
that makes it very tough because, of course, not only is she comfortable with her 3,000 downloads, but unlike vinyl or even a CD, that can be duplicated ad infinitum. How do you keep a handle on the fact that you're actually able to make money on this rather than have it distributed through the, you know, underground or even people just
It's tough. There's a lot of bootlegging going on.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that wouldn't walk into a hardware store and walk out with a hammer, but they will steal music.
Right.
And they don't think it's stealing.
Right.
So I don't think there's much you can do about it, and I can't think about it. There's really, you know.
Right. And
there's
you
not
don't,
much
of
I can
course.
Do about it.
What worries me is the way the bigger players in the industry are trying to compensate what they're trying to charge for, say, royalties for online play. I think there'd be a lot more online play if it was more accessible, not only the dollars, but the reporting and everything else, for the small guy to be able to say, hey, I'll be willing to pay, but you know, make it so that it doesn't seem like it's an IRS form.
Right. I don't know what the answer is to that.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't. I mean, at some point, they're going to have to, like, put a serial number or some kind of code in tracks. I think somebody's working on it, but they don't have it now. I think they can do it in videos. But
most of the things in videos, of course, can be broken. It's just a question of how hard you want to work at it.
Right.
But this is a huge issue, because the other factor is you as an independent are doing something that the big boys are not, and that is you are distributing your music without radio airplay being your driver. And with the major players, they're looking at current hits, and virtually 100% of their marketing is going to be on airplay.
Right.
And you know, this has always been a prescription for disaster, whether it was the Paola hearings or what have you. But where we are now is that on the one hand, you have the RIAA saying, well, we want radio stations to pay us. On the other hand, they're saying, and you're the only promotion vehicle we have. So it's been 40 years since Stan Cornyn was at Warner Brothers first lamenting that everything was tied to radio. But I don't think we've gotten very far in terms of marketing it any other way.
Right. And you know, I've gotten a lot of airplay on college stations in a lot of different formats.
Yeah.
And I've asked a few people that I've done interviews with. I said, do you report this to BMI? Do you report this? What do you mean? What do you mean? They don't even know what that's about.
Yeah, now commercial stations do it.
Commercials. I mean, I do get royalties from Music Choice and from Sirius Radio and from things like that, but college stations don't report. Internet stations very rarely report.
Well, yes.
So what can you do?
Well, again,
the music police, where are they?
Well, and with internet stations, for instance, again, the reporting is so difficult and convoluted that it's not even a question of, you know, would we pay the 0.02 cents per person listening? Most of these people don't know who's listening. It's, you know, it's requiring them to jump through hoops that they don't comprehend, so it's easier to say, well, no, I'm not doing anything. But these things are ultimately going to collide financially because there are not that many people who will do what you're doing just as a labor of love. For instance, if you weren't performing live, you couldn't do this. So it's issues that'll come up. But more to the fun aspect of it, you played with some interesting people on New Soul Stories, as you do on most of your stuff. How did you wind up hooking up with Darlene Love?
I got friendly with her because the guy who co-produced the album with me, Seth Glassman, Junior Mintz from Little Isidore and the Inquisitors, actually. He is her musical director.
Okay. I did not know Seth was Junior Mintz. Okay.
Seth was the famous Junior Mintz.
Yes, yes.
And so he hooked us up, and it was great. She's a wonderful person, and she's a really, she's a very giving person. And she, we did it, and it came out great.
Yeah, You've Lost This Loving Feeling, which is on New Soul Stories.
Yeah.
And she is somebody who has never gotten her just due in this industry, not only recognition, but dollars as well. So it was wonderful to see her performing on something current.
Yeah, and she's amazing live. She's just... Yeah. She's amazing in the studio, of course, but live she really puts out. I haven't seen any. I saw her show in June. It was amazing.
Yeah. And then, of course, You Better Run, that I opened with Gene Cornish and Eddie Brigati.
Eddie.
Yeah,
the first time those two appeared on record in about 40 years. But they're back out doing it. They're doing really well.
I'll bet.
Yeah, the four of them are back together. Actually, they're up in Toronto now, I think, doing 10 days.
Yeah. Well, the music
I was very fortunate to get these guys to do it for me.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised. And you say you go back, way back with them to your beginning, so in some way it was a reunion.
Yeah, well, I've worked with Gene over the years in different situations, and in the last 4 or 5 years I've worked with Eddie. And his brother David Brigati.
Mm-hmm.
So we got friendly, and I mean, I've known Eddie for a long time through Gene, but I just asked him to come in and sing with me, and he said, "Okay."
That was easy enough.
He said, "All right, I'll be here."
Talking with Angel Rissoff, it's angelmusicinc.com. 29 Ways. It's on New Soul Stories, the current CD. So you can buy it from angelmusicinc.com. Check out where Angel's going to be performing. I got several more questions. If you do, I won't hog them for the next half hour. And you betcha we got a number of things we'll discuss after that. But I thought, man, I don't know why. I heard from many people that it was just in some ways a sucky weekend. So I said, let's do something lighthearted then for the first hour. So that's what we're doing right here on the Raleigh James Show.
I got a master key to fit every lock. A hidden door behind the grandfather clock. Got 29 ways to make it to my baby's door.
To my love, baby's door.
If you need me real bad, I can find about two or three more.
One, two, many more.
I got 29 ways,
baby's door.
I got 29 ways.
Raleigh James Show. Raleigh James Show. And for this, you're staying up late.
Yeah, that's from Angel, Where Have You Been? And we're talking with Angel Rissoff, by the way, angelmusicinc.com. And I picked that because it's rare that there's a remake that I prefer over an original. But this is one of those records. And, of course, originally by the Drifters, recorded in 1956, and it turned out to be the flip side of Ruby Baby. But I think that, Angel, I got to tell you, I think you nailed it. I like it better than Gerhard Thrasher.
Oh, I don't know about that. Maybe the fidelity is better. I don't know if I'm better.
No, I think you just...
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, you really did just flat out nail that record. And what interests me is, of course, we have similar tastes. So when you're putting out a CD like New Soul Stew and you're leading it with It Ain't a Big Thing, I know I'm going to love it. So is it just personal taste? What causes you to pick the songs you do?
That's what it is.
Okay.
If I'm covering a song, it's a song that I've always liked and I've always felt that I could do. And, you know, it's like I Want to Be. I love the early Manhattan stuff.
Oh, me too.
I would like to do a whole album of the Manhattan stuff. But I also like this. I have some favorite songs that I've always wanted to do. There's an album that was done by Jack McDuff and Jimmy Witherspoon. It's called The Blues Is Now.
Uh-huh.
To me, it's a perfect album. Every song is a little three-minute masterpiece. Someday I would like to just do the whole album.
Ah.
Just because I would like to do it, not to try to do it better, because I don't think it could be done better, just because it would be fun.
Right, and it would be fun. You mentioned I Want to Be, and that is one of my faves. And I always talk about how much I love the Manhattans, but I learned the hard way through John. I now have to say I love the Manhattans on Carnival. Because, of course, later in the 70s, they went on to have a number of hits, and they were performing somewhere near us, and John said, "This is great. You're going to see the Manhattans." I said, "No, this is going to be just terrible." And he said, "What do you mean terrible? You love all this stuff." I said, "They're not going to do one song on Carnival, I guarantee you." And of course, you know, it's all kiss and say goodbye. And while that might have its place, the Manhattans on Carnival were just a moment in time that can't be duplicated.
Can I?
Yeah,
I mean,
there's so many.
All great songs.
Yeah, they are all great songs. So I was thrilled that you did that. Now, are you working on another CD at the moment? Are you thinking about what's coming next after New Soul Stories?
Yeah, I'm, you know, after I put out one, I take a little break, And but I'm starting to record songs again, original stuff. I got a bunch of original tunes, and I'm thinking about some covers.
Okay.
And but mainly I'm just writing.
That's great.
A lot of writing. I got a lot of tracks. I have some tracks left over from the last CD and stuff that they just didn't make it.
Yeah, no.
They were good tracks, but they weren't finished, and I was done recording. Sometimes it gets to the point where you got to say, "I'm done.
Right.
This is done."
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but your writing is truly wonderful, and that's another thing with a lot of artists who are great at redoing the old music. Sometimes when they try to write, I silently am saying, please don't add to this, you know. And when you come up with things like Break Out the Tears, that's just a terrific record, or Soothe You. So many things that are just wonderful, and that's a talent that's not tremendously duplicated among people who love our stuff.
No, it's not, but I've absorbed a lot of this stuff, and I don't try to rewrite it, but I write songs to promote a sentiment I'm feeling at the time, and that's how it comes out.
Yeah.
It's like this song, I have a song out now that's doing pretty well down south, Fine Wine. It's on the new album, and in my mind it started out as an impression song or something like that. But it turned out, Soothe You started out as an impression song, but turned into something else.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I'll say it did. And yeah, Soothe You. Well, there are so many things on that new Soul Explosion that are just terrific. Of course, you and Junior Mints doing Mighty Cootie Fayo is
right,
wonderful.
Right.
Some of the stuff surprised me, because I had never heard of Fonda Feingold, for instance, and Love You Should Have Stayed.
She's a great singer. She's a great writer. And
virtually an unknown.
She's been around. She had a few deals. She had a few albums out. New York is full of people like that.
Right, right.
New York is full of a lot of creative people that have had records out, but got sidetracked. They're side people.
Mm-hmm.
You become a side person. You start making a living, and you neglect your own stuff. You know, and not that there's anything wrong with that. It's, you know, playing music is playing music. I will play music anywhere at any time with anybody that I enjoy working with. But a lot of people fall through the cracks because of that.
So many. In fact, it's one of my great frustrations. I've always said that when I retire, I want to go live on Val Shively's third floor just so I can hear, you know, over a million soul records I've never heard before.
Right.
And
well, I got a friend, Fred Bond, in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
I went and played in Pittsburgh, and I stayed at his house for a few days, and just the stuff that he has in his house, forget in his record store, the attic, the stuff he has in his house will drive you crazy. Just the width and breadth of his collection. The 78s could take you a month to go through.
And the frustrating
part. I plan on doing
part.
That at some point.
Right, exactly. The frustrating part is that whenever I get to something like that, where somebody's got that kind of a treasure trove, it's amazing to me how many records, how many artists that I've flat out never heard of.
Right.
And you hear some of this stuff, and you know that it will die with us. But the reality is, if you go live at Fred's for a while, you won't have time to hear it all. You know,
no, never.
That's it.
Well, look, vinyl was cheap at one point. You know, and they just put them out.
Of course.
And there was people that owned shellac companies. They put them out.
Of course.
They just, you know.
Well, yeah, and the whole process was cheap. There wasn't a lot involved,
right.
Though I think there is a certain hell for the quote-unquote recording engineers who overmodulated some of the stuff. Occasionally, I'm sure you've hit it, but like the greatest record ever, and you say, wait a minute, this was recorded in someone's garage on a white wall and sack. This is not okay.
Right. Well, I mean, a lot of my favorite records are distorted.
Yes. Yes, tremendously. Yeah. But when it's absolutely unintentional, of course, you know, you with your ability and your talent, you could remake them when you like them. But, you know, for somebody like me who, you know, couldn't hold a tune if it had handles, there's just no way. So there's a great deal of frustration. And so many labels, you mentioned holding the 45s and stuff. So many labels you look at and you say, I've never heard of the Big Ben label before, you know,
right.
things like that.
Right.
So
right.
it is a frustration. And I do fear that when we go, a lot of this will go as well.
I hope not, but I think, you know, I think there's hope because, say, like in Pittsburgh, I met a bunch, yeah. I played for record collectors in Pittsburgh.
Uh-huh.
They had a three-day thing called a Beachburg. This was a few months ago, and I met a bunch of younger people, not mm-hmm. young, but relatively younger people
right.
that were into vinyl, that were into collecting, that were into keeping it alive, that were as obsessed as some of the older people.
And Pittsburgh is a legacy all its own. I don't know that there's any town in America quite like Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, when it comes to obscure oldies.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is a town where the number one oldie of all time is probably still High on a Hill by Scott English.
But, I know, and there's groups I've never heard of.
Right.
And they're great, and God bless them.
Yeah, and groups that aren't even from Pittsburgh that say Porky Chedwick unearthed 40 years ago. And
right.
you listen to this stuff and just, like I remember the first time I drove through Pittsburgh and heard Don and the Delighters doing Elephant Walk. I said, man,
right.
I know I'm listening to Pittsburgh. Nowhere else would be playing this record.
And Porky's still around.
I understand he's in Florida doing it.
Well, he did a half hour or 45 minute set while yeah. I was in Pittsburgh. He stood
yeah.
up there, he's in his 90s, and
yes.
he stood up there for 45 minutes, wouldn't sit down, and played records.
And I think that he, like I say, I think he's mostly in Florida now, but he has an internet show. So the neat thing is that, you know, for people from Pittsburgh, they can hear the pork with the torque anytime, but also he probably is to the people who happen by, somehow by accident, you know, and find his
right.
site. It's, yeah, here's a guy in his 90s still doing it, or a guy in his 70s like Jerry Blavitt in Pennsylvania
right.
and Philadelphia. You know,
right.
there are Art LeBeau on the West Coast.
Right.
And that's interesting. Do you do any West Coast gigs?
No, I haven't. I haven't. I've gotten some play from, they have the swing, the Western swing thing.
Uh-huh.
And I've gotten some play, but no, I haven't. I haven't gotten any calls for that. But I wouldn't mind. I would love to go out there. I would love to go to San Francisco and L.A.
Yeah, well, I would think that a lot of the things that are East L.A. staples are the very things that are on your CDs. So.
Well, I've gotten a lot of play from the East L.A. crowd. I've been featured in Chicano Magazine.
Right.
So,
right.
and the lowriders really like me.
Exactly. And
yeah.
Art LeBeau still puts on concerts. So that'd be great if you could do one of those, because I know the lowriders would like it, as well as the lowriders in San Antone. You'd also have a big following there. Yeah.
I'm ready.
Yeah. No, I think that there are those pocket markets, you know, like a Pittsburgh, that are in all sorts of places you don't expect that would love this stuff if they're unaware
right.
of it. So it's just tremendous. Now, you've been doing this for over 50 years now, I assume.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been doing it since I was a teenager.
And in that 50 years, of course, 50 years ago, most of the audience was young people. It's interesting
right.
today that you're still having the people who were there 50 years ago, but you will, amazingly so, actually, but you will have young people as well. So
no, it's true. It's true. Like, I'm going down south this week, and there will be a mixed crowd. I mean, it'll be a lot of people in their 40s and 50s and 60s, but there will be 30s, and there'll be some teenagers because they like to dance. They like to shag.
It's interesting because when you were doing this, say, 50 years ago, say you're on stage in 63, again, people in their 40s, there was that complete musical generation gap where
this was not music.
No, this was very well put. This was not music.
Not music.
And here we are now. What's most interesting to me is that young people haven't broken off again to a music form that is as appalling to us as it was to parents 50 years ago.
Well, I find some things that are out there appalling, but there's still a lot of good music.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I understand the energy and the angst And the rebellion in a lot of today's music, there's a lot of great stuff out.
Well, that's it. There is. And I guess my point in this is that we don't have that complete bifurcation, that generation gap, that where the twain was never going to meet. Today, you will be as entertaining to a kid as you will to her grandparents.
Well, I think in those days, like, say, my parents, they were used to listening to clarinets.
Right, yeah.
They were used to listening to big bands that played in harmony, played in tune, and were not, you know, I mean, bebop was appalling to people.
Sure.
It was very appalling to people, even musicians. And, but they were used to Louis Jordan.
Right.
They were, but when rock and roll or the real raunchy rhythm and blues came in, I think the fidelity of the music, the recording was not as precise, and the music was out of tune. I mean, let's face it, a lot of my favorite records are out of tune.
But that's in part why they're your favorite records.
They're right, exactly.
You know, and the thing for me is, if it has a backbeat, I don't care if they're reading the phone book.
Yeah, right,
so
exactly.
There are just sounds, but sure, bebop was a departure, but bebop also didn't capture an entire generation the way.
No, but I also think it was because of the lifestyle and because of the sideburns and the black
right.
leather jackets,
right. everything.
I think that was part of it that turned off people, just like the hip hop generation turns off a lot of people because of that dress. Because if you listen to the Count Basie band rocked.
Yeah.
The Count Basie band was hitting hard, and a lot of those sax players were honking. So it wasn't that they never heard it, but they were dressed in tuxedos.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. But yes, yeah. it was a departure. But here, 50 years later, while yes, there are people you might listen to some music and say, no, I don't relate to this. You might look at somebody's dress. This is just not acceptable. But as a whole generation, we've not gone through another split.
Right.
And that's interesting to me.
But I find people that are very hardcore in one genre or another, and they're very precise in what they like. And if you're a little bit outside the box,
oh well, of course,
you're not acceptable.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's true with doo-wop fans. It's true with blues fans. It's true with jazz fans.
Oh, of course.
And I think our generation has a more open mind because we've heard a lot of stuff. I mean, if you look at the record chart from the 1960s and 70s, it was very eclectic. It wasn't as compartmentalized as it is now.
Yeah, well, even in the 50s when you had pop standards existing with R&B on the same
right.
chart.
Right.
So yeah, there absolutely was that. Of course, there also were not many outlets from which to choose. We we're all getting our stuff from the same place, where today you
right.
can be as individualized as as you so desire.
Right.
All the things you've done on CD as Angel Rissoff, and I think I probably have them all, I hope so anyway, what has been, and is there one, standout biggest hit, the one that you're saying, man, this is the one? Any one cut?
I Want a Love I Can See.
Okay.
Was number one for about a year down in the Carolinas.
All right, and that's off of Where Have You Been?
The Beach Music Hall of Fame or something. But Harlem Hit Parade was a very big hit. Jitterbop was big. Soothe You made number 17. I mean, I think I Want a Love I Can See was the biggest one down there.
Okay.
But around the country, I've gotten a lot of play on a lot of different songs. It's hard to tell. I can't pinpoint a market to say I'm going to hit this market with this mm-hmm. song.
No.
Because I can never tell what they're going
right.
to like.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And if you could, boy, there's a talent and money in that
yeah,
as
right.
well, obviously.
Right.
But angelmusicinc.com, of course, the website for buying the CDs and for finding out where you're performing. Where are you going next?
I'm going to Raleigh, North Carolina. I'll be there Thursday at TJ's Nightlife.
Okay.
And on Saturday, I'm going to play at something called the Williams Lake Reunion. Williams Lake was a big place in the 60s where teenagers congregated, and it was a stop on the Chitlin' Circuit. And
oh, yeah.
I don't, the history is that it burnt down or something, but they're having a reunion. They've been having it for about 8 years now, 9 years, and it's a great turnout.
Neat.
And where else? Oh, I'm going to Charleston. I will be in Charleston at the 8th Annual Beach Music and Shag Festival on the 25th.
Okay. And that's hot. Yeah, the Williams Lake Dance Club. That's neat. That'll be a good gig. I know there'll be a number of other people there. And when you go to the Carolinas and you're on a lineup, it's usually pretty darn good because there's some real symmetry. Of course, back in the day, there were some amazing pairings, shall we say. Who was the weirdest person you were ever on a bill with in terms of being a dichotomy from what it is you do?
Tiny Tim.
Said without hesitation.
Tiny Tim.
Did you get a chance to talk to him?
No.
Okay, I was going to say, the people I know who did came away just startled that he didn't think it was an act.
No, I don't think it was an act.
He believed every bit of it.
He believed he was, I don't know if he believed it or that was just him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's.
But it's going to be an interesting show at the Williams Lake. Eddie Cornelius is going to be there, the lead singer of the Cornelius Brothers.
And Baby Sister Rose, yeah.
Yeah. And the Legends of Beach, which is a great group. They're going to be working with me.
Okay, good.
And we're actually going to do the Charleston thing, too. But if anybody's in the New York area, on the I will be playing at the Cutting Room with the City Boy All-Stars.
Okay, when?
On the 25th.
Okay. All right.
And also, I'm going to be at the Bijou Theater in Fairfield Avenue in Bridgeport, Connecticut with the Mars Project. The Mars Project is a trio that I put an album out with. It's completely different than the stuff you've been playing. It's more of a rock, blues kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And it's fun to do, and it'll be a fun show. So if anybody's listening and want to be in the area, come up and say hello. I love to meet new people.
Yeah, now the Mars Project, that's interesting. I've heard of them. Is this the Connecticut-based Mars Project?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I have heard of them.
It's with a guitar player named John Girardi and Mike Marble. John Girardi is like a guitar hero from Stamford, Connecticut. He's been around there for years, and we've been playing together for 10 years, on and off. And this is a project that we just started working. We started writing stuff, and we had about 30 pieces of music, and we recorded 12 of them, and it came out really well. But it's a departure for me. It's like a genre that I've never really played in, and it releases my teenager, I think.
That makes it fun.
Yeah.
Sure. That's great. Well, I just think it's terrific that you are still putting out CDs and still out there performing and still out there they're doing it, because certainly it's not surprising to me at all that you are booked constantly, which, in fact, we were first talking about doing this on a Friday night when we first discussed it, and, you know, you're not available, it's bottom line, and that doesn't surprise me. But it's still got to be difficult to continue to put out the CDs, to market it, to turn it into a business, and to, you know, to fight the millions of people who are online. So thank you for continuing to do it for all of us.
Well, it's a labor of love. I mean, it's a business. It is a business, and it's a challenge, but I love it. I love the process. I love the recording. I don't love the music end, the business end of it, but it's fulfilling.
Well,
but
and
I
you're,
love the
you're
music,
lucky.
So I will continue to do it as long as I can.
You're lucky because of all the people who are wanting to make their living being a musician. It's only a rarefied few who actually do it. And sometimes it's talent, but as you know over the years, talent's necessary, but not always sufficient to being able to stay at this.
No, it's persistence, and it's showing up, and there's some luck involved.
Sure.
There's always being in the right place at the right time.
Well, Angel, it's always fun to talk to you. I will continue to be playing your bumpers all night tonight just because I want to, and hopefully people will pick up on New Soul Stories and the other CDs that are still around, and hopefully you'll join us again.
It's always my pleasure to talk to you. You're very knowledgeable. You ask great questions. which is not usual. And, you know, and I wish you great success being back on the air. And thank
we'll
you for your support down through the years.
We will. I will look forward to your next CD, and don't wait that too long to talk to me.
No, I won't. Let's stay in touch.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Angel Rissoff, New Soul Stories, the current CD. And I just blew the break, but I want to take another moment to say angelmusicinc.com.